Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, with Sohrab Ahmari, we go through what is the Republican Party's position on foreign policy and what should it be? Also, the Biden regime has announced crack pipes for addicts. And also, should Ron DeSantis support a bill that prohibits the teaching of gay agendas in our schools? Email me directly, freedom@charliekirk.com. If you want to support our show, go to charliekirk.com/support. If you want to get involved with Turning Point USA, go to tpusa.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage. For personalized loan services you can count on, go to andrewandtodd.com, the wonderful andrewandtodd.com. So we have Sohrab Ahmari coming up, who is terrific and has really made me think deeply about a lot of different topics and issues. But first, I want to get into two separate issues, and I don't even know if they're related. I actually haven't thought that deeply about whether they're related or not, but we can talk about them. But they're definitely – one is just an outrage and one is actually a solution that is being called an outrage. So it's actually – I guess they're unrelated in that way. And okay, we'll get into it. The first – and I'm sure you've heard about this story, and if you haven't, you actually probably live a better life than I do because I've been inundated with this story. It's just so depressing. I mean, again, we do our best on the show not to just do kind of like the doom and gloom news about the citizen is rising and things are happening. And then you got stories like this. You're like, oh, my goodness. Okay, so it's almost hard to believe, and I want to make sure I get the facts right on this. And Connor or Andrew, you could send it to me. But the Biden administration, the Biden regime has made a decision that we need to subsidize drug use. And this is something where they want to try. So there is a belief that started from colleges, of course. It came from colleges that if people are using drugs, they are victims. Now, I fully admit that some people who use drugs can be victims. They can be victims of rape or sexual abuse or trafficking, and they go to drugs as a way to try to cope with that. I'm sure that's a percentage. I don't know what percentage it is. But most people who do drugs are not victims. Almost most people, even the people that have that stuff happen to them, that's not an excuse to just go do cocaine or put meth into your body. And this is a way that the left views the world versus how we as conservatives view the world. Generally, and with some exceptions, especially with some of the inflation exceptions and some of the lockdowns, generally we believe that if you are going through through a less than desirable circumstance, first and foremost, you as the individual should take responsibility for the condition of life that you are in. And we definitely believe that when it comes to smoking crack cocaine on the side of the street in San Francisco. Now, a belief from the colleges that it's just so hard to believe it got taken seriously was that, hey, we have all these meth addicts and all these people doing drugs on the side of the streets in San Francisco or Los Angeles, what we need is drug injection sites to make it easier for people to be able to do drugs. Because who are we to say what they are doing is wrong? What we need to be able to do is to actually assist them and help them do drugs. So there's a new story that came out, which is that the federal government was going to help people that are doing drugs by providing them with funds to make drugs use safer for addicts. It's a $30 million grant program, which closed applications on Monday and will begin again in May. It'll provide funds to nonprofits and local governments to help make drug use safer for addicts. Included in the grant, which is overseen by HHS, are funds, quote, for smoking kits and supplies. Now, the director of the smoking kits and supplies is not Hunter Biden, although he is a subject matter expert in smoking crack cocaine and getting away with it. But the position of the federal government now that we have 100,000 drug overdose deaths is, you know, the problem is we don't have enough crack pipes. If you think I'm joking, listen to it yourself. Cut 65.
So the Biden administration now has a new plan. They are funding a $30 million program that will distribute smoking kits. These kits include crack and meth pipes. Okay, they're using taxpayer dollars for this. President Biden claims this is part of his executive order that is supposed to help reduce harm in marginalized communities.
Now, I'm just going to point out the obvious here. That's the very same federal government that went on an all-out jihad against ivermectin. So they go out on an all-out campaign against hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, all on the same breath saying, hey, you know what we need to do? We need to give people pipes so they can smoke crack on the side of the street because equity. So ivermectin, which could potentially be life-saving in the battle against COVID, I have dozens, let me say this again, dozens of firsthand experience of people that have taken ivermectin that had a, were taking a turn for the worse, and ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, azithromycin, melatonin, aspirin, and other early interventions helped them tremendously. But the position of the regime is, hey, who are we to judge that crack cocaine is wrong? I mean, how many lives could have been saved if 30 million pills of ivermectin were distributed, or $30 million worth of ivermectin was distributed? That's a lot of ivermectin, because ivermectin is super cheap. It's like pennies on the dollar. How much ivermectin could $30 million have actually done? What would our COVID rates be? How many Americans would still be alive? It shouldn't be easier to get a crack pipe in America than a life-saving drug in America in the midst of a pandemic launched by the Chinese Communist Party. And ivermectin is a lot cheaper and a lot safer than crack pipes. Let me say that again. Ivermectin is a lot safer than crack. But that's the controlled substance that your government decides to declare war on. And by the way, the crack pipes are probably made in China anyway. Health and Human Services spokesperson Sarah Lovenheim claimed the Free Beacons report was blatant misinformation. Really, why? When asked to clarify what was in the safe smoking kits, she said they could contain alcohol swabs, lip balm, and other materials to promote hygiene, and reduce the transmission of diseases like HIV and hepatitis. There's a really easy way not to get HIV. Don't have premarital sex. But the Biden regime doesn't want to say that. This grant is designed to assist applicants serving underserved populations, especially the Black and LGBT populations. It is part of an executive order Biden issued shortly after taking office. Now, Jen Psaki is denying this, but you can only deny what's actually in your executive order so much. I mean, it's right there. It's in writing. It's $30 million for smoking kits for drug addicts. And you know what's so amazing about this is that I was watching Tucker Carlson as he kind of did a monologue on this. And my wife and I were watching this together, and this goes to show the kind of awful position America is in, or just the complete garbage we've grown accustomed to. Neither of us were surprised. It's not like it was like, oh, this is outrage. It's like, yeah, makes sense. Okay, what's for dinner? That's how conditioned we've become. It wasn't like this major outrage thing or I can't believe it. I was like, we're just kind of like, yeah, that's probably right. Could totally see that. But Jen Psaki, they're denying it. Play cut 123.
They were never a part of the kit. It was inaccurate reporting, and we wanted to put out information to make that clear.
What is in the safe smoking kit?
A safe smoking kit may contain alcohol swabs, lip balm, other materials to promote hygiene and reduce the transmission of diseases like HIV and hepatitis.
What I love about this is that the White House has to talk about like a $30 million grant. That's nothing. That's like an insignificant amount of money in the federal government. And they have to get into the specifics. Like, yeah, it's a lip balm and it's scissors to cut their hair. And it's the amount of defense they have to play on this issue. And honestly, God bless the Washington Free Beacon again for hitting a home run and revealing this. But she's not wrong. I mean, in the grant, it says this, quote, included in the grant will be smoking kits and supplies. Lip balm is not a smoke. Is that part of smoking supply? Again, smoking crack cocaine, not exactly a subject matter expert on this. I guess that their lips get chapped after they overdose for the fifth time on crack cocaine. For $20 per package of 40 ivermectin pills, it could go to 1.5 million people. But instead, your government, our government, taxpayer-funded dollars, don't worry, everybody, $30 million is not going towards hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin or aspirin or melatonin, monoclonal antibodies, intravenous therapy, vitamin D regimen. No, it's okay. You can rest assured that the crack addict that defecated on your lawn and showed his junk to your six-year-old, his lips won't be chapped anymore. Hey, everybody. Charlie Kirk here. The left is waging a war on free speech with the help of big tech and the United States government. Thankfully, there are still companies that believe in our Constitution. That's why I'm proud to partner with Patriot Mobile, America's only Christian conservative cell phone provider. They offer broad nationwide coverage because they use the same towers as the major carriers. Get the same great service without funding the major carriers who donate to leftist causes. Patriot Mobile has plans to fit any budget, and their U.S.-based customer support team provides exceptional service. I know the CEO of Patriot Mobile, Glenn. He's amazing. And Patriot Mobile shares your values and supports organizations fighting for religious freedom, constitutional rights, and the sanctity of life. Make the switch today. Go to patriotmobile.com/Charlie or call 972-PATRIOT. Get a free activation with the offer code Charlie. They also have special discounts for our veteran and first responder heroes. Vote with your dollars. Switch to Patriot Mobile. It's patriotmobile.com/Charlie or call 972-PATRIOT. patriotmobile.com/Charlie. So Ron DeSantis is just terrific. He really is. And every time you think, Ron DeSantis might let you down, he just kind of doubles and triples down. And so if you want to know about, you kind of look at the landscape, and one of the groups that you should never try to provoke, unless you really know your stuff and you are in a position where you have freedom to talk like we do, is the Alphabet Mafia. The Alphabet Mafia is no joke. The LGBTQ, ISA, LGBT, what, you know, XYZ, whatever it is. They are brutal. Now, we've been in, I think, a, what's a good way to say this? An arm wrestling match with the Alphabet Mafia, I'm putting it nicely, for quite some time. Now, let me be very clear. Some of my closest friends in the world are gay, and they're some of the sweetest people. We have people that work for us, and they're tremendous. Dave Rubin. However, and Dave Rubin, I'm going to be on his show in just a couple of hours, and I think the world of Dave Rubin. He's a great person, and he loves liberty. I have a traditional view of marriage. I believe marriage is one man, one woman, and I believe it should stay that way, and our laws should reflect that. But I believe, of course, in the decency and dignity of all people. Of course I do. But a disturbing trend has been more than just recognizing gay people for their beliefs or their lifestyle. No, now all of a sudden there has been a trend of recruiting more people into that lifestyle. And we see that in this first clip. Okay, let's start with 124. So let's try to frame the problem before we try to go to the solution. In cut 124, this is a mom from California who is suing the state of California for, in a predatory fashion, going after her daughter and encouraging her daughter to change her gender. Play cut 124.
You let these teachers come in and act as if they have nothing wrong. They've done nothing wrong. A mistake? How long of a mistake? How many mistakes are we going to take before my child almost lost her life? They didn't tell me that my child was suicidal. You allowed these teachers to open their classrooms teaching predatorial information to a young child, a mindful child that doesn't even know how to comprehend it all.
What an unbelievably powerful statement by that mother. That's right. These teachers, many of them that are members of the Alphabet Mafia, have become predators. So Ron DeSantis is recognizing this. He's realizing that 6- and 7-year-olds are not emotionally mature enough to be able to process what a gay person is, what transgender is, and he wants to remove that topic altogether from the schools. I am fully supportive of this. And anyone who isn't, the fact that you want like 6- and 7-year-olds to talk about really, let's just say, graphically sexual topics, awfully creepy. Play cut 85 of Ron DeSantis, and then we're going to play Alfred E. Newman who responds. Play cut 85.
And look, at the end of the day, you know, my goal is to educate kids on the subjects, math, reading, science, all the things that are so important. I don't want the schools to kind of be a playground for ideological disputes or to try to inject. So I think it's just, let's get parents involved. Let's make sure anything that's discussed is age appropriate, but let's keep the focus on where it needs to be.
That's exactly right. Age appropriate. And if a 7 or 8 year old has a inclination to be gay or lesbian, that's where a parent needs to be actively involved. It is not the role of the state to do that. But Pete Buttigieg says that this is going to contribute to suicide attempts. Oh, really? All of a sudden now the regime cares about suicide attempts? As you guys lock down the entire country and keep masks on kids, now you're worried about suicide attempts? Play cut 84.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the reason is that it tells youth who are different or whose families are different that there's something wrong with them out of the gate. And I do think that contributes to the shocking levels of suicidal thoughts and suicide attempts among LGBTQ youth.
Now, I'm not going to get into some of the psychological literature as to why that might be the case. But if you are confused about your identity and then you are told to wear that identity as if everything is normal and good, then maybe there might be something deeper at play there. I fully support Ron DeSantis protecting the Floridian children from these predatory topics that they do not understand and they do not comprehend. This is the role of parents, not the role of the state, not the role of some creepy 28-year-old that just graduated from University of Florida and wants to try to recruit more people to become transgender. God bless you, Ron DeSantis. It takes real courage for you to stand on that topic, and you have our support. Someone I really respect who's made me think deeply about a lot of things is Sohrab Ahmari, who has an unbelievable piece that he wrote for the New York Times. And I don't think he works for the New York Times. I don't know. I wouldn't hold it against him because he's so consistent and so good. But I'm glad he wrote it in the New York Times because it got wide distribution, and I think that's a very good thing. And I think that one of the most important debates someone can watch is his debate versus David French. And what is a conservative? And I have to say, Sohrab's argument is looking better and better every single day, and I'm completely in his camp on that one. And I wasn't at first, and I think that's a really good thing. And he's with us right now. Sohrab, welcome back to the Charlie Kirk Show.
Charlie, thanks for having me back, and good to see you since our time in Florida, where it was much warmer and nicer and freer.
Yes, that all those things are true. So you have this great piece. I want to explore it with you. It's called Hawks Are Standing in the Way of a New Republican Party. And you go through in great detail, and you're a phenomenal writer of how you describe this, about how the neoconservative posture remains, especially with this Ukrainian-Russian dispute, and how almost the muscle memory impulse of the Republican Party is to saber rattle and to try to say that if you do anything except wanting to have a full-fledged kinetic war with Vladimir Putin, then you're an agent of Russia and you actually might be on KGB payroll. Walk us through that.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm one of the people who's been arguing over the past 3-4 years that the Republican Party took a right turn, a correct turn on foreign policy, starting with President Trump, where he called out, you know, some of the party's most cherished orthodoxies on foreign policy. The notion that NATO is always and everywhere a good thing and the U.S. should continue to tolerate our, you know, European allies not really doing any share of fair share of their burden, not lifting their fair share of the burden for our common defense, and the United States committing so much more than they do. He pointed that out. I think that really resonated with the base of the party. I think that it resonated popularly when he just forthrightly spoke out against the post 9/11 regime change wars, which have been disastrous. Let's be honest. Yeah, I used to be a hawk as well, and I've evolved on that. I used to champion this kind of the Arab Spring and liberating this and that, and you just have to be intellectually honest and look at the outcome. So our argument is that that instinct is right. It's the instinct of the Republican base. It actually is also widely shared even beyond the GOP base, of people are tired of our kind of expansive foreign policy abroad, and we need to focus internally. We have a country where we have a huge fentanyl crisis. We have an unguarded border where, you know, 1 million, 2 million people, illegals, are crossing at an astonishing rate. We have declining working class life expectancy, something that's actually unheard of in the rest of the developed world. And we have our own internal kind of confusion and crises. We have a country where we can't agree why this country was founded. One half of the country says it was because of slavery. The other half tells the accurate story that it was not mainly to defend slavery that the American Revolution was launched. We have a country where we can't agree on what man and woman are. You know, there's there are a large chunk of our elites who believe that there are 57 genders and that gender can be changed and so forth. So all that being said, we the conservative movement, have to work internally. We have to consolidate internally. And yet, and even sort of America First people or populist people in the party who get that domestically still can't let go of that, like you said, that reflex, that muscle memory of escalate all the time. So that, for example, Senator Marco Rubio, Senator Cotton, of whom I'm fans and
yes,
you know, I'm friendly,
I totally
with
agree.
You know, who are trying to take the party in a more populist direction on a lot of issues, and that's good. But then the Ukraine thing happens, and they're right away, you know, accusing Biden of appeasing Vladimir Putin, or kind of drawing these overdone and frankly kind of inapt analogies between Putin and Hitler and Churchill. And it not every time and space in history is 1933 all over again, right? Or 1939. There are other things that are different from World War II and demand a different response than like total mobilization against Nazis.
No, I'm laughing because it's so wise, and it's this kind of overdone that everything is going back to the 1930s. Like, yeah, it also could be the 1960s. It could be Vietnam, and that was really bad too. So I want to ask you, I have a lot of respect for Tom Cotton. We have him on our program. I think he's actually the best on immigration, legal immigration, I should say. He's terrific on family values. He's number one, I think, on crime in the whole Senate. He was willing to tell – I think he wrote an op-ed for the New York Times that he got canceled about using the Insurrection Act before that word was overused in American society against BLM. But why is it, Sohrab, that Tom Cotton and Marco Rubio, again, who we both have respect for, why is it they go to that immediate position? What is the incentive there?
Well, I think it's I'm more sophisticated, or maybe too sophisticated, to think that it's like it's what the donors want. I don't think that's the case. I think this is genuine conviction. I think it's a product of conservatives who came of age at a time. It was an unusual time during the Cold War when we had this very clear ideological adversary. And you wanted to limit its reach everywhere. And that was the anti-communist project. And if I were around, if I were a conservative in that age, I'm pretty sure I'd be a very hardcore Cold Warrior. I get that at that time. It was and the U.S. was very cohesive internally. It was an attractive model around the world. And then you have Soviet communism trying to enslave, a large chunk of humanity and vast swaths of the planet. So you get that. And that was the model. Then the Cold War ends. The United States is this kind of in this unipolar moment. It's this one global power. And that mentality that we should continue to kind of expand liberalism into our model. When I say liberalism, I don't just mean the left or leftism. I mean our general model. We should seek to expand it everywhere. And that American foreign policy just means this bipartisan consensus on this expansive view of what America's mission mm-hmm. is in the world. It's not just to be a country like other countries. It's to be a global hegemon, a values hegemon. And that did not work out well over the past 20 years, right? I mean, we launched these regime change wars. Again, I confess I cheered some of them at the time. But the result was we created stateless, ungoverned spaces across the Middle East and North Africa. We sent millions of refugees and economic migrants into Europe, destabilizing Europe's politics. We obviously created spaces in which terrorism could thrive, and then we had to get involved in a different way. And we shattered the Arab state system in some ways, and that was a mistake. And so you just got to reassess. And but that mentality that, you know, the U.S. is always on offense ideologically, won't go away. And it's in tension with what conservatives worry about domestically, right? Domestically, we sense that there's this weird alliance of corporate power and woke values under which we labor. Now add to it the kind of COVID medical regime. And we don't like it. But you don't understand that when you promote NATO expansion everywhere, what is NATO expansion? It's the expansion of this same way of life that we domestically find increasingly intolerable. NATO just recently, one of the official, you know, blue check NATO accounts just tweeted something about how NATO is integrating gender issues at every level of its operations or something like that. And it's like, first of all, yes, I'm sure Vladimir Putin is like shivering in his boots thinking about such a gender diverse NATO. But second of all, that's the ideology. So if you don't like it at home, why have the same kind of liberal imperialist mentality of like the post 9/11 era? Things have changed. Like maybe conditions will come where the US has to be on a really kind of a war footing again. But right now it just feels like normal and natural to say, no, we need to, you know, domestically look internally, consolidate domestically. You know, certainly we have allies to whom we have treaty commitments, and we wouldn't want to back away from those. But to try to expand that further to places like NATO, where it needlessly creates points of tension with Russia, I think that's crazy. I think most Americans think that crazy. In fact, the polls show that most Americans don't want any kind of military involvement over Ukraine.
I agree completely. And the reason I used incentives is because you close your article by saying the persistence of donor-backed Republican hawkishness remains an obstacle to national development. That's why I asked that.
No, that's fair enough. I think that's part of it. Let's be honest. There is a kind of a foreign policy architecture that's part of the GOP. That's part of it. But what I meant to say is that it's not like these lawmakers are mindless and they're just like, yes, sir, Mr. Donor.
No, I think that's right.
You know, yeah. They're not. They're sophisticated people. They think through things. They're sincere in their convictions is what I'm trying to say. So, it's just that I think it's a mindless set of convictions right now.
So we have 2 minutes left in this segment. In the last segment, I want to talk about China because I don't know if I agree with you completely on it, and it'll be fun to explore. But I want to ask you about this idea of liberalism. Liberalism does not rest well. Liberalism almost has an insatiable appetite to try to always unshackle the next victim group. You wrote about this in your book, which I found to be super fascinating, and you find it with the alphabet mafia here, with the transgender stuff or with the racial groups, and you also see it in the foreign policy establishment. Can you kind of connect all those through lines together? Because the same group of people that want to increase literacy rates for Pakistani girls or whatever are the ones that also want to try to have predatory transgender practices in high schools in California.
Yeah, I mean, this is very painful, I think, for the right. Again, you know, we are the right rallies to the military, and rightly so, because patriotism is a natural virtue. The right rallies to the flag, and that's a good thing. But sometimes it seems like the flag that the United States unfurls around the world is not what the flag that most Americans, or certainly most American conservatives, cherish. It's the rainbow flag.
Yeah.
And I mean that sometimes literally.
No, that's exactly right.
Our embassies will display it everywhere to make an ideological point. And they do it, you know, in places, especially in some places where it's meant almost to offend, you know, local Catholic sensibilities in some place like Poland. Or frankly, how insane it is to do it in Afghanistan, right? Like, we support women's rights in Afghanistan. Of course, women are brutalized in Afghanistan. But do they really need like the latest Oberlin College LGBT alphabet soup theories in Afghanistan? Was that a useful priority?
Yeah, I mean, and look, it's replacing one tyranny for the other, right? It's like, okay, we're going to get rid of the Taliban so you can go live under Robin DiAngelo's universe or whatever, right? So we're going to get rid of Taliban, and we're going to put Planned Parenthood in every clinic. Okay, Sohrab Ahmari with us. He writes in the New York Times, Josh Hawley suggests the move to shift our focus on East Asia. But even there, Americans should beware of mindless China hawkism. I do agree with that. Nothing should be mindless. Yes, the United States has real differences with Beijing. We must punish industrial espionage. We must defend treaty allies. We must seek a more balanced trade relationship. We also must find areas of cooperation, exchange, and shared interest, seeking to avoid any future wars and instead communicating with mutual respect for a civilizational equal. Now, I'm going to take a little exception, Sohrab, with the last part. Communicating mutual respect for a civilizational equal. I don't trust the Chinese at all. I think they're soulless and godless, Chinese Communist Party. I think they have worldwide ambitions, and I think any communication with us they'd take advantage of. prove me wrong.
So I think that it's important to recognize that China is a very old civilization, and they've had dynasties come and go. And the Chinese people, most of them, there are certainly dissidents, but most of them don't make that distinguishing that you just that distinction that you just made between their regime and their country. It's their country, and they're a rising power. And they're a rising power about whom we should worry for all the reasons I laid out, we laid out, my co-authors and I, in that op-ed, right? I want America to do well relative to China. I don't want this to be, to 21st century, to be a Chinese century. But I think that the next kind of hawkish trap for America First people, for populists, is to be worked up about issues that are, in the grand scheme of things, pretty marginal. But in trying to seek those things, you end up expending a lot of energy. And that, speaking about, for example, the issue of Taiwan, right? Sure. So what level of military resources are we prepared to expend to include China in our ambit as opposed to where it is geographically? So like, how do we compete with China? China right now is making deals in South America. It's making deals in Africa. It's securing its own energy needs in a very aggressive way. It is creating these kind of very complex supply chains that work very well for it. Meanwhile, for the United States, despite all the kind of value hawkism and talk about human rights in China and so forth, when the height of the pandemic hit, we were so coupled to China that we couldn't secure our own masks initially and personal protective equipment, right? In many ways, still, there are fears about, okay, defense critical industries, how much are our supply chains tied up with China? So what am I trying to say here? I'm trying to say the way to deal with the East Asian challenge is not to go in all headlong with this kind of rah, rah, rah human rights rhetoric. That's what got us into trouble.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Over the 20 years earlier, but to be kind of realistic and say, look, like right now, how are U.S. supply chains? You know, like if we need to mobilize for a real crisis, a real military crisis, can we repurpose factories for defense production? Do we have the legal architecture, the will, the technology? How do we, what if semiconductors are in trouble in Taiwan? Can we manufacture our own? These are the kind of questions that I think kind of America First people, populists should be asking. And so it's not like paying undue obeisance to the Chinese Communist Party, but yes, you know, like, not needlessly provoking 1.6 billion.
Yeah, and I think what you're getting is the real way to go after China, and that would actually help our country, is like not importing vitamin C from Wuhan anymore. But the bargain that is coming, and I agree with you, is they want to go build another 5 aircraft carriers, where we really should be talking about tariffs and redesigning the supply chain, where the national security apparatus would love nothing more than an excuse to try to expand the leviathan of military strength in East Asia, when the real actual thing that would benefit America is economic implications, or, you know, kind of what – I think that's what you're getting at.
I think it's what you're getting at is industrial policy.
Yes.
They have serious industrial policy. I want us – I think my co-authors and I want the U.S. to have similar industrial policy. It's bonkers, because the same people who will like attack us for saying, well, don't get all worked up about Taiwan, were just 5 years ago, they were prepared to let China build national security infrastructure, sensitive infrastructure for the United States. I think that's a mistake. I'd rather stop that than to tub thump about issues that we can't do anything about unless we're prepared to get into a massive war.
I don't think they're ever going to have mutual respect for us, but we can have you back on and we could talk about that. Wise take. Sohrab, thank you so much. God bless you. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts. As always, freedom@charliekirk.com. If you want to get involved with Turning Point USA, go to tpusa.com. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.